Funding for Think comes from SMU Doctor and Master of Liberal Studies programs.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. Whenever I travel to a new place, I picture myself living there. How cool would it be to make a home in San Francisco or Boston or Washington, D.C.? The thing is, my life is here in North Texas. My work is here. My people are here. So I'm not really tempted to pull up stakes. Journalist Melody Warnick spent her young adulthood seeking what a friend called the geographic cure, moving from city to city around the U.S. in search of new and better homes, hobbies, friendships, ultimately new and better versions of herself. But ultimately, really ultimately, after moving from super hip Austin to a small Virginia college town, she got it. It wasn't as much about the places she lived, but about how she chose to live there. The new book by journalist Melody Warnick is called This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. She lives in Blacksburg, Virginia. Melody, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much for having me.
You had assumed when you moved to Austin, which many North Texans visit frequently, that that would be your final destination. So what changed?
Austin is a city that anywhere outside of Texas, and probably some inside of Texas, people talk about it like it is Mecca. This is the place you want to be. And I assumed when my husband got a job there that we would want to stay forever. Everyone loved it so much. But not long after we arrived, we realized how different it was from what we were used to. We were coming from Iowa, a place where we never had to get on the freeway unless we were leaving town. And suddenly in Austin, you know, my husband had a highway commute every day, and it was hot, hotter than we were used to. And those are things that people who have lived there for a while just take in stride. But for us, it was a little discombobulating. Mm. And my husband in particular couldn't quite get used to it. And after we had lived there for just about a year and a half, he found a job ad for his dream job in Blacksburg, Virginia. And he whipped out a resume and he got the job. And so all of a sudden, we, having only lived there for a couple of years, we were starting that process all over again in a new state, thinking that this would be it. This would be the perfect place. And then discovering that it too had its own quirks and issues and it wasn't Shangri-La.
You and your husband are not alone in that wanderlust. Americans move a lot. Why are we so eager to pack up and go?
I think part of this is cultural conditioning. We have come to a point in society where people feel like it's hard to be successful staying in your hometown, and that, in fact, if you stay where you come from, that you're some kind of a loser. Hmm. So we believe that in order to climb the corporate ladder, we need to move different places. I think there's also this fear of missing out. We want to try new things and experience new things. And when we stay in the same place for a long time, we may feel like we're stagnating or that there could be something better out there if we just found it. You mentioned that feeling that a lot of us get when we go on vacation and we think, what would it be like to live here full time? And it's those kind of needling thoughts that get a lot of us to abandon the good thing that we have in search of the possibility of a better thing. I think there's a huge appeal to the idea of starting over somewhere else with a blank slate.
How are our tastes affected by the landscapes in which we grew up?
You know, there's some studies that show, in particular, landscapes can influence our preferences as we get older. That if you grow up, for instance, near the coastline, that as an adult, you're far more likely to want to live near a beach. If you grew up in the mountains, that can take a spot in your heart where you feel like that's where you should live. Think of how different food is from town to town. The kinds of things you might eat growing up in Dallas or living there for a long time are probably fairly different than the kinds of foods that might be familiar if you're from Maine or from Minneapolis or from Seattle. So where we live, especially as children, but even as adults, affects an enormous amount of our lives. Sometimes we discount how much it has to do with our behaviors. I mean, think of things like you probably are, you know, partnered with the person you are partnered with because at one point you lived in the same town. Your friends generally are people who landed at least for a while in the same geographic area. So these are parts of our place is a part of our life that has an enormous effect on who we become. And yet we take it for granted. We don't often pay attention to our places or necessarily make very conscious choices about them. We kind of treat them as background to our lives.
So it's one thing if you are in the place where you've grown up, if you have a hometown where generations of your family have lived, but if you've moved around a lot, what are some of the ways to tell that we have achieved what you call place attachment?
So that was the kind of question that got me started thinking about this book. Having moved several times, I began to notice that some people seemed to really be happy where they were. And for a lot of people, that was, like you said, people who had grown up in the same place. This was their ancestral home place. Generations of their family had been there, and they had never really considered moving somewhere else. But the feeling of place attachment is a sense of being at home in a place, being connected. And it is an emotional experience that is rooted in behavior. When sociologists study this idea of place attachment, what makes people feel connected to where they live, they ask a series of questions. And some of them are things like, do you feel like you belong in this community? Do you know your way around? Do you feel comfortable here? Do the friendships you have mean a lot to you? Are you surrounded by people who you consider your kind of people? So part of it is finding a place that feels at home for you. But the other realization that I came to when I moved from Austin to Blacksburg, Virginia, is there isn't necessarily some magical town that you can move to where all these elements will just combine and you will be happy instantly. I've realized over time that no two people experience the same town in quite the same way. In some ways, our geographies, the places where we live, are sort of a mental construct. It's how we perceive our towns and how we behave in them. And because of that, I realized that if I wanted to feel more rooted in my town, if I wanted to feel more attached in the place I was and not have that constant desire to move on, that I could do certain things to make me feel better. Some of them are really simple because place attachment relies, for instance, on people feeling like they know their way around. I started walking and biking more in my town and working to develop a mental map of where I was. One of the place attachment questions that a sociologist might ask you to measure how rooted you are in your town is, do you like to be involved in things that are going on? Are you invested in the future of your town? And so I started volunteering more. And simple acts like this can really change how you feel. They sound kind of too easy to be true or effective, but they actually have an impact.
So I grew up outside New York City, but then I spent my teenage years and most of my 20s in El Paso, Texas. And I don't think I ever appreciated El Paso when I was there. I was just always thinking, like you did early on, that there was someplace better out there and I couldn't wait to get there. When I met people, though, there were people there that loved it. And I was confused by that. And yet clearly they were having a better day-to-day experience. Sometimes it seems, according to what you've learned, that it's really about just making a choice.
Exactly. And it's interesting you bring up El Paso. I have a friend who's an army wife. Her husband's in the military, and they move around because of that every few years. But her longest and most beloved stop was El Paso. I had driven through El Paso, and my opinion of El Paso maybe wasn't the same as hers, but
it's much nicer if you get off the freeway, by the way.
Right, I'm sure it is. She had put down real roots in this town, and it was a choice. I asked her how she had done it, and she said that she'd gotten a piece of advice when she married her husband and embarked on this life. Her husband's grandmother had told her to always unpack your suitcase. And she meant it as, you know, unpack your stuff, but also live your life wherever you are. Even when you may not be there for long, you embrace the place you are. You learn to appreciate what it's good at. You build relationships. And those kinds of things can make a town that on the outside doesn't make sense to other people feel beloved to you. I've seen that happen over and over again, talking to people who are truly passionate about their cities and towns, when to others who don't live there, it's kind of a huge question mark. Why would you choose to settle there? I, as part of the research for this book, I took a trip to Fargo, North Dakota, which when most people think of it, they think of the movie Fargo and, you know, blood and horror.
Not a great advertisement for the city. Right?
Right, exactly. It's not a great advertisement. And if you don't think of that, you think of bleak, snow-covered fields. And I went into it thinking, oh, why would anyone live in Fargo? I just don't get it. But when I went there, I met people who were so committed to their city. They wanted to make it better. They were, you know, starting festivals and opening businesses. And they really, you know, part of it was changing the city, but part of it was just acknowledging that the city did have a stigma and we're going to overcome it by convincing everyone how truly great it is. One of the women I met while I was there was a young woman who had been elected to the Fargo City Council. And she told me this story about leaving Fargo and moving with her husband to California for 18 months or so. And they had that experience of feeling like, this just isn't a fit. This, we don't belong here. And eventually they moved back to Fargo. So people make the choice to settle in the place that feels like home to them, even if no one else understands why it feels like home.
You write, emotion follows behavior and feelings follow action. Explain that.
It's kind of based on this idea. Psychological studies have shown things like when you smile, even when you don't feel like smiling, eventually the emotion rises to match the behavior. You feel happier. And so one of my guiding principles as I try to become more passionate about the town I had landed in, Blacksburg, was to do the things that people who love their town would do. I didn't really feel it at first. When I first moved to Blacksburg, with all these high hopes that this little town would change our lives in so many ways for the better, I had this startling realization that, oh, it won't. This is another town that has annoying things about it, and it rained too much, and the library was too small, and we didn't know anyone, and we were lonely. And so that feeling of love wasn't there at first, and I decided to just pretend I loved Blacksburg. And eventually, as I did those things, the feelings followed.
My guest is journalist Melody Warnick, author of the new book, This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email think@kera.org or you can call 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, where students can customize their degree, like Diane Jay, internationally published creative writer. More at smu.edu/MLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with freelance journalist Melody Warnick. Her new book is called This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. Melody, reading this book, I was thinking a lot about the old school understanding of marriage, right? This necessary partnership where both parties give and take, and the commitment is what deepens the relationship. We all love these love at first sight kind of romantic stories, but, you know, hoping the next hot city will fulfill our dreams is like expecting an infatuation to last for the rest of our lives.
Exactly. And I love that analogy. In some ways, when you're choosing a city to move to, it feels sort of like a dating relationship. You know, you're checking it out. Maybe you go there on vacation, you do a lot of research, you Google them, and you're kind of making a leap of faith to decide this is the place I want to be. And that good feeling can last for a little while because there's novelty to it, and it's interesting and different. But eventually reality sets in and you realize that no place is perfect. Every place has irritating things about it or struggles. Every city has a bad part of town or something scary going on in the government. And you kind of have a choice. You can either just decide, ugh, I hate it here, you know, throw up your hands and move on to somewhere else with the idea that the next town or city will work better for you and be somehow more perfect. Or you can decide to invest where you are. So it's that process of putting down roots, of deepening that relationship. One of the things I realized while I wrote the book, while I worked on falling in love with my town, is that when you invest, you feel invested. The more time and effort and energy you put into your town, into enjoying it, into helping it grow, the more you want to stay. It becomes part of you. You have a sense of ownership. It's not just a place that you landed. It's your town. Ethan Kent, who's the vice president of a group called Project for Public Spaces, told me that young people in particular, millennials, don't want to go to a town and just live there and sort of have the town handed to them. They want to have a part in creating the town, in making it what it is, which is why I think you see people moving to places like Detroit and Cleveland and Akron. These are not places without problems, but they're places that are open to having that input. They're open to people coming and creating things there. I think coming to love your town is partly, you know, having a hand in creating what it's like, whether that's really locally in your neighborhood, throwing a block party or developing relationships with your neighbors, or in a grander sense, perhaps running for political office or solving a problem in your town. But I think it's rewarding to feel like you are shaping your town and you're making it better. And that makes you more attached.
This seems like a question people shouldn't need to ask. And yet I know there are a lot of people listening who don't know a lot of their neighbors. It's one of those things that's really easy to do if you've just moved in. What happens, you know, there are people who've lived where they live for 5 years and maybe only know a few people. What do you recommend?
It's kind of a hilarious question because I have been in this situation so many times. There's kind of a window when you move into a new neighborhood where it's okay to ask people's names. And then after a while, it becomes really horrifying that you don't know who they are. And I had this problem where I'd move into a new town and part of this starting over blank slate thing would be like, this is the time when I'm going to be a great neighbor and I'm going to know everyone. And I'd make this huge effort to ask everyone their names and then I would promptly forget them. And so I would hide when people went out. Right. You would hide when people come out to get the mail and stuff like that. But there are some major benefits to getting to know your neighbors. Studies have shown that when you know your neighbors, as in you've had conversations with them, you maybe trust them to, you know, feed your cat while you're on vacation, or to, you know, they take your trash can to the curb when you're out of town, it can provide a huge well-being boost. You tend to be happier. And that's true even when you have other strong relationships like family or friends in town. In fact, one study out of the University of Michigan showed that people who have good relationships with their neighbors are 67% less likely to have a heart attack and 48% less likely to have a stroke. So that should be enough to get you off the couch and out the door. In my neighborhood, I did the Leave It to Beaver thing and baked banana muffins and took them around. And, you know, my neighbors were, I live in a neighborhood where we're all renting, people aren't very permanent, and we all kind of come from different backgrounds. My next door neighbors were a Sri Lankan family. The guy across the street had dreadlocks and ear gauges, and I wasn't sure what the reaction would be, but getting a banana muffin from the neighbors was a uniformly positive experience for them, and especially for the guy with the ear gauges that I thought would be, you know, maybe roll his eyes, and we were a little scared of him. We didn't know him very well, and he was just over the moon. He couldn't get over it. Banana muffins, oh my gosh. It takes a little bit of effort. And as an introvert, I know that there can be a desire to just not know your neighbors. You know, that sometimes we think that a good neighbor is someone who leaves you alone. You know, as long as their dogs aren't barking all night and they're not parking in your driveway, we're good. We don't need to have more of a relationship than that. But you feel more comfortable where you live if you do at least know names. You know, you say hi. You don't have to be best friends hanging out all the time, though that can help too. But when you think of the fact that your place is it's a geographical construct, and nothing is a more intimate geography than your neighborhood, your street, the people who live right around you. It's kind of odd in a way, if you think about it like that, that we don't know each other. It's like we're all riding the elevator and not making eye contact, you know. But it's worth it to reach out to neighbors, you know, to have a block party or to invite people over. One simple idea I heard was have a Friday night dinner out on your lawn. It doesn't have to be an organized thing. Simply take the thing you were going to eat and go eat it outside in a place where people can see you, and perhaps they'll do the same thing too.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak with Milton in Fort Worth. Hi, Milton.
Hi, Chris. I had a question and then a comment. My question is if you could address age and the effects of age on where you go when you move. And the second one in my comment is that I moved here from Alaska, and I spent I'm getting perilously close to 70 years old, and I spent 40 years between Seattle and Alaska and Portland, and I spent most of it there. So I have some kind of shock living here that I don't think I'll ever get over. But the point is that I moved here for the person I love. So part of my heart will always be in a place that I love, which is Alaska. But the person I love is here. So I decided that I'm going to sort of bloom where I'm planted. Hmm. And so at my age, it may not be so much of what's outside the door of my house, but what's inside my door.
Well, Milton, we're glad to have you in Fort Worth and in North Texas. What do you think about everything that he put on the table, Melody?
I love what Milton said about making a choice to be in the place where his loved one is. A lot of us have to make that choice. When you're married or partnered, you don't always agree on what home is. And someone has to compromise in this situation. I think one thing that maybe helps is understanding that a huge part of place attachment is feeling that there are people you love and connect with in your place. And that can be inside the walls of your own home or outside, people that you've met. And hopefully it's a combination of all of those. But one study from the Pew Research Center found that people were the least likely to move when they had at least six members of their family within an hour's drive of where they were. So it's the idea that relationships really matter. And I think that's an interesting thing to think about when we think about aging. A lot of people who are working are looking forward to the day of retirement as the moment when they finally get to move to their dream place. So many people have had their eye on the resort town or the beachfront condo for years, just planning for that time when they'll retire and they can move somewhere else. And that can be a good time to start over in a new place. On the other hand, you've lived your whole life in a town. You've built an enormous amount of social capital where you are. And it's worth considering the effects of leaving that all behind as you retire and move to a new place, which may be the exact moment when that social capital becomes more valuable. You're aging, you may need a little more help, and it's a good thing to be surrounded by people who you've known for a while and who can offer that help. I also have found that people should think about aging in place. When you settle in a place and you're getting older, think of the long term. Where can you live happily for 30 years instead of 10? Does your house allow you to age in place? Do you have neighbors who will support you? He said he's coming up on the cusp of 70, and that's a great time to really invest in relationships, not just with your partner inside the house, but with people around you as well.
All right, let's go to the phones now and speak with Mary in Dallas. Hi, Mary.
Hey, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
What I was going to point out, what I felt, I came from a tiny town of 500 families up in the mountains on a lake up in the Northeast, and everybody knew everybody, and it was a great community. I've since gone out in the world, and I've enjoyed every place I've been, and when I go someplace new, it's not about me, it's what can I do for others. It's about the people that are there. That's what makes you feel connected, is the people. And I look to join the community and not wait for them to embrace me. See people doing something in their front yard and they need help, go help them. Don't even know who they are. It doesn't matter. Just introduce yourself and engage yourself. But it's not about me. It's about helping. And then you're embraced.
Sounds like Mary's a good neighbor wherever she goes, Melody.
Right. I was going to say, I think Mary is the poster child for place attachment. Because in an ideal universe, when you're moving to a new town, it's not necessarily that you're, going through these steps in a rote way thinking, what can I get out of it? It's that, you're embracing where you are, and that happens to have this side benefit of making you love where you live. And of course, if you're the kind of neighbor who stops and helps people rake their yard and, says hi and gets to know people, people respond to that. And no wonder they would like you. They'd want to befriend you, and that makes it easier. One of the things I did when I moved to Blacksburg, we moved there on my birthday. And anyone who's moved knows that that's not a good birthday. The most depressing birthday in the world. You're brand new. You're getting your electricity hooked up. And so after I had been there 1 year, I thought, okay, this is the year we're just going to have a huge celebration. And then my husband went out of town, and I just thought, what can I do to make this more enjoyable for myself? And the idea I came across was something that I had written about for a magazine. And it was about doing a certain number of random acts of kindness on your birthday. So kind of turning the tables and making your birthday less about you, less about presents and cake and absorbing people's praise, and more about reaching out to others. So my birthday was on the 17th. And so I settled on 17 acts of kindness. And I did this with my two daughters. We went to the donut shop in town and bought boxes of donuts that we dropped off at the library and at the fire department. We bought flowers and took them to the hospital. We taped coins to the claw machine in the grocery store with the idea that some kid would stumble upon it and it would make his day. And so it's one of those behaviors that in some ways is outwardly focused. You know, we were doing this in the hopes that the people that we connected with, the people we gave something to, would feel uplifted by that. But on the other hand, it always has the effect of making you happier where you live, making you pay attention to the people who are around you. And having an effect, it's kind of part of what I was talking about earlier, creating your town. And we do that when we do positive things in our community.
We know that buying local is good for local merchants. Why is it good for us?
Buying local is one of the best things that I started to do when I decided to start doing these Love Where You Live experiments. It's good because, like these other things we've been talking about, it builds relationships. There's this concept of commercial friendships, and it's this idea that in an increasingly lonely society, some of us are relying on relationships with, say, the barista at the coffee shop or the guy who does your dry cleaning. And we feel like these are actual friendships, even though we only see them occasionally. But those kind of loose ties can actually make you feel more comfortable where you live. And it, again, can make you feel more invested. You have a stake in the success of these businesses and in the success of your town.
We're speaking this hour with journalist Melody Warnick about her new book, This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. We'll come back to the conversation in a couple of minutes. You can join it by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program, where students can customize their degree, like Lonnie Gentry, pursuing healthcare leadership and ethics. More at smu.edu/GLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with journalist Melody Warnick about her new book, This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. Melody, you spent a summer in Texas, so you know about heat. It gets very hot here in the summer. There are places where it's just brutally cold in the winter, places where it rains all the time. What have you learned about coping with less than perfect weather that characterizes a particular part of the country?
I feel like weather is the red herring in place because it's something that a lot of us think is totally vital where we live. We have to like the weather there. And indeed, weather can really affect your experience of a town. But I remember when I went as part of my research to Minneapolis, I was telling my cab driver what I was doing there and what I was looking at. I was looking at why people chose to move where they did and what mattered about it. And he said, "People always ask me, how can you live here? It's so cold." And I tell them, "My city is better than your city in every way, except that one." So there are trade-offs. The sociologist Robert Putnam found that the closer you get to the Canadian border, the more social capital people tend to have, meaning they're more likely to help each other and build relationships. And part of that is a product of the cold. And the opposite is true the farther south you go and the hotter it gets. And it's not 100% clear why that is. But there are some things that you can do to just learn to cope with the weather. I do agree that some people have an easier time with it than others. When we moved to Austin, I'm from California originally, and hot felt normal to me. My husband, who had grown up mostly in Colorado, was really stymied by it, felt very overwhelmed by it. But it's kind of a mindset thing. I think, you know, every area of the country has their weather issues, and you just, you know, think to yourself, this is like our, you know, our version of a Midwestern winter. We have 6 months of summer, and maybe we don't go outside as much, but it'll pass, and then we'll enjoy it. I remember moving to Austin from Iowa, sitting out on my back patio in February in shorts, thinking of the sad, sad people I had left behind who were, you know, buried in snow at that point. So you have those compensatory moments where the weather is exactly what you want it to be at exactly the right moment, and you kind of cling to those, which I think is kind of a good philosophy in general as you approach your town or your city and you think about it and your relationship to it. You know, the things that you struggle with your town may not be things that you can change, the weather or the traffic. So instead, you focus on the things you love and on the things you can change. And simply that exercise and positive thinking can affect in a positive way your experience of where you live.
All right, let's talk next with Kevin in Denton. Hi, Kevin.
Howdy. Well, I sort of have a reverse side to your deal. My people came to this area in the 1820s, so I count myself a native. But you said that people should go into a town and change it. And how about assimilate? We don't always necessarily need changing, but population here in Denton when I was a child was in the 20,000s and now is over 100,000. And people come in, and what they've all wanted to do is change it to the places that they left from because they didn't like them.
What do you think, Melody?
What a great point. And Kevin's exactly right. When you've lived in a place for a long time, when your family comes from there, it's really hard to see a town change, to see a town balloon in size, and to see outsiders come in. I know when I lived in Austin, there was always this kind of division between people who were from the old Austin, back when it was a town with a lot of, you know, cowboy boot shops, and all these transplants who were coming into the new Austin that was hip and cool and completely different from what the natives were used to. So I think there's something to be said for both those things. When you're an outsider coming into a new town, you shouldn't try and immediately change things. There should be a period of simply absorbing and accepting what the town is. That period can last years. And, you know, the longer we live places, the easier it is to accept them for what they are and to appreciate them. There may come a point when you realize that there is something that would be better, but no change is without its detractors. And some of those things can cause controversy. But it also behooves the old timers to help towns evolve in positive ways. In the place where I live now, Blacksburg, Virginia, a few years ago, there was a movement to build a farmers market square, a place where the farmers market could come every week. But the problem was the planned spot for it was a parking lot downtown in a place where there was already a lack of parking. So the town manager fielded, you know, tons of hate mail about this. How can you take this place away? This is going to ruin downtown. And they had enough support that they went forward with it anyway. And now this is one of the most beloved spots in town. And the worries that people had about the parking have kind of faded into the background. So change can be hard to accept, but when it's done with input from people and good intentions, often it can really help a place reach out to more people.
We have an email here from Kate who says, my favorite piece of advice ever is where you go, immediately find one place you're comfortable and start going there every day. After a short time, names and faces become recognizable to you before the rest of your roots are in place. This provides a comfort that gives you the immediate boost to get out there and meet more people and feel the pulse of whatever new place you're in.
Kate's exactly right. And this concept of a place that you go every day, it's called a third place, meaning a place that's not home and not work. It's someplace separate. And often it's, you know, a coffee shop or a bookstore or a library or something like that. And it's exactly right that when you find a place like that in your town, a place where you can go and sort of slowly become comfortable there, learn people's names, feel like this is your place, it's sort of a proxy for that feeling of place attachment in your larger town. I actually, as one of my Love Where You Live experiments, tried to do this in Blacksburg. My husband and I chose a restaurant in our town called Lefty's, and we decided we are going to become regulars here. It's going to be like Cheers, and we're going to go often enough that everyone's going to know our name, and it's going to be great. And unfortunately, we have, you know, writer/college professor budget, and we could only afford to go to this restaurant once a week. We crossed our fingers that that would be enough, and we went, and every time we had a different waitress, and it just wasn't working. No one knew who we were, and we didn't really know who anyone else was either. But even that little effort turned out to have some nice side benefits. Even though no one recognized us, we started to feel at home in the place. We noticed details about it, where they stacked the coffee cups and how they ran the kitchen. We started to see familiar waiters and waitresses. And, you know, we developed our favorite dishes on the menu. Those little behaviors that make you feel like you're owning something in your town can really help you feel settled there. And that's a great piece of advice. I will add that it works a lot better if you choose a place that is a local independent business in your town. Don't go do this at Starbucks when you can find an exact replica of that Starbucks in every town in America. Do it at the local coffee shop or the local restaurant, someplace that is truly unique in your town that gives it its character, and make that your third place.
All right, let's talk now to Sharmina in Plano. Hi, Sharmina.
Hi, Chris. This is a great topic. It's been bothering me a lot lately. But I had a comment and a question. The comment was, like, I feel like in Texas, W came from Florida, and I noticed that most of the homes in the subdivision have these big, tall, super parks. In the back, you don't get to see anybody.
Sharmina, you know what? I'm so sorry. You're breaking up. I think what you wanted to talk about is the fact that a lot of homes and subdivisions, there's parking in the back or through the alley, and it's a little bit harder to see people when you come home. I'm going to hope that that was maybe what you wanted to talk about and ask Melody to respond to what you do. Some neighborhoods, you know, have lots of easy ways to make eye contact with your neighbors, Melody, and some don't. What do we do?
That's true. And new neighborhoods more and more are being built around this concept of new urbanism, meaning that you put garages in the back and you put porches in the front and create community areas that encourage people to get out and know their neighbors. But if you're in a subdivision where that is not true, you kind of have to work for it a little more. When I lived in one of my other towns, my husband and I lived in a duplex, and the woman who shared the other side of the duplex would come home from work every day, and she would pull into her garage, and before she even got out of the car, she would close the garage door behind her as if to say, please do not talk to me.
Do not approach.
Do not approach. I am not interested in that. And you will encounter that in some of your neighborhoods. But there are different approaches that you can take. In a town in Arizona called Surprise, the city actually offers something called a block party trailer. It's a trailer that comes fully stocked with yard games and paper plates. And if you it's free to rent, and they give you a $100 gift certificate to the grocery store to help you buy food and drinks. And they actively encourage neighborhoods and town to throw block parties. This is a town that has boomed in population recently. And so you have a lot of transplants. And throwing block parties has become the really old-fashioned way to help neighbors connect and get to know each other. So there are things like that you can do. You know, join the neighborhood association or start the neighborhood association. Start a Sunday dinner club where you invite a certain number of neighbors over to eat with you on a Sunday night. One person that I talked to for the book described working with his neighbors to solve a problem. They had had their street dug up for some, you know, water work, and it had been repaved poorly. And he worked with his neighbors to petition City Hall and talk to city council people and get the problem fixed. So when we have those, you know, causes, things that we need to talk to our neighbors for, it can help us develop those relationships too.
All right, we just have about a minute left, but the quirkiest suggestion in your book, I think, is my very favorite. You say, write a love letter to your town and leave it someplace for some stranger to find.
I stole this idea from a woman in Toronto named Lindsay Zier Vogel. She stumbled on this idea. She was a creative writer, and she started writing letters to her city, Toronto, and she would put them in these beautiful airmail envelopes, and she would just simply leave them around town for people to find. And every so often, she would hear back from someone. She heard from a woman who was a transplant to Toronto, hadn't lived there very long, and was really struggling with it, thinking about moving away. And one day she went out to her car, and there was an envelope on her window with a little love letter describing something great about Toronto. And it changed her mind about where she was. She thought, if there's someone in the city who loves Toronto enough to do this, I can last here a little longer. So I've actually tried this experiment recently with people, and it's fun to see what people think of, you know, the things people love about their town, the parks or the weather. Writing it down, committing to it, and then putting it out into the world for someone else to find is just this fun thing you do to remind yourself you live in a great place.
The new book by journalist Melody Warnick is called This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. Melody, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Samantha Guzman is associate producer with help on the phones today from Frankie Paris, and Jeff Whittington is executive producer. I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.